Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Thought I should let you know tonight that the solar wind is 368.5 kilometers per second. However, the proton density is higher than I've seen it in 2 years, 18.8 protons per cubic centimeter. No sunspots still, but a nice coronal wind flowing from a coronal hole should reach Earth on January 26th or 27th. That will be your clue to look for an aurora borealis. Also this in, a newly discovered asteroid 2009 BD slowly passing by Earth today, only 400,000 miles away. Now that's close. The small 10-meter-wide space rock poses no threat, but it merits attention anyway. The orbit of 2009 BD appears to be almost identical to the orbit of Earth. 2009 BD may be a rare co-orbital asteroid circling the Sun in near tandem with our planet. So, kind of interesting, it may not be alone out there. This is the year of the ox. It's beginning with the solar eclipse on Monday, tomorrow. The same moon that triggers the Chinese Lunar New Year will pass directly in front of the Sun, dead center, covering 93% of the solar disk. You just won't be able to see it from the United States. You'll be able to see it from the Indian Ocean, though, so if you want to get aboard a plane and a boat, you can get out there and keep your eye on it. Want to let you that snow covered the Jebel Jais area for only the second time in recorded history yesterday. According to the RAK government, temperatures on Jebel Jais dropped to minus 3 degrees C on Friday night. On Saturday, the area had reached 1 degree C. Major Saeed Rashid Al-Yamahi, a helicopter pilot and the manager of the air wing of RAK police, said the snow covered an area of 5 kilometers and was 10 centimeters deep. That's about 4 inches. Aisha Al-Hebzi, a woman in her 50s who has lived in the mountains near Jebel Jais all her life, said snowfall in the area was so unheard of, the local dialect does not even have a word for it. Hail is known as baird, which literally translates as cold. 20 years ago, we had lots of hail, said Ms. Al-Hebzi. Last night was like this. At 4 a.m, we came out and the ground was white. Some leading global warming experts are blaming this record cooling on global warming. The NOAA reports that the Earth has been steadily cooling since 1998, now down almost 3/4 of a degree Celsius. Large earthquakes have rumbled along a southern section of the San Andreas Fault more frequently than previously believed, suggesting that Southern California could be overdue for a strong trembler on the notorious fault line. A new study has found the Carrizo Plain section of the San Andreas has not seen a massive quake since the much-researched Fort Tejon Trembler of 1857, which, at an estimated magnitude of 7.9, is considered the most powerful earthquake to hit Southern California in modern times. Lisa Grant Ludwig, a principal investigator on the subject, first visited the Carrizo Plain about 20 years ago, digging trenches in an area west of the Panorama Hills known as the Bidart Fan. By looking at the pattern of soils and using radiocarbon dating on charcoal deposits, she found evidence of five large earthquakes dating back to the early 1200s. She found a gap of some 400 years between the 1857 earthquake and the one before, but only about 100 years separating the three previous quakes. Now, the interesting thing about that is she says that we are due, actually overdue, for a massive quake 7 or greater on the Richter scale. And you remember Charlotte Webb, who was on this program a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, said that we are due a quake 7 or greater on the Richter scale. Now, there was one a few days later, but it was way around on the other side of the planet. Could be. We need to give Charlotte a call and find out what's going on in Southern California. A moderate 5.7 magnitude earthquake shook Anchorage, Alaska's largest city, on Saturday morning. The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake's epicenter was 161 miles southwest of Anchorage. There was no tsunami warning in effect, according to the West Coast and Alaska Tsunami Warning Center website. There were no immediate reports of injury or damage. The western coast is part of what is known as the Pacific Rim and has been returning large amounts of data, none of which matches the previous 70 years of geological records. Something is rumbling beneath the surface. Should be interesting. Glad I don't live on the upper northwest coast. Last week, here on X Squared Radio, we ran an archive of Tom Van Flandern. You know, he passed away recently and was one of the most widely published astronomers in the world today, and a multiple appearance on X Squared Radio. We offer our condolences to his family and hope that his work will carry on to future and further enlighten the world as to the truth of our origins in the stars and what we understand about how the universe was made and actually how it functions. This week, we're having open lines. If you'll remember, 2 weeks ago, we received a program from the year 2015 describing the condition of the world in the years. It was a record program reaching more than 13 gigs of download in just 10 days. If you missed it, why not subscribe to X Squared Radio Archives and get squared? This week, we are trying new communication system that hopefully will present a little better sound quality for you live. If you have been a long-time listener and have never called in, do so tonight on one of tonight's subjects. Also coming up February 1st, we have Walter Crutton talking about binary evolution. And 8th of February, we have Dr. Gary Schmack to discuss his The God Experiments. That is a full month of great leaders and their expertise. Don't miss a one. Now, you may have noticed on the expertly and also on our audios of commercials, because we have chosen it. We have moved away from commission junk because, well, they just stopped making their commission payments. So now we're seeking new affiliates who wish to reach our listeners with their products. So all you have to do is go to x2-radio.com, and you too can reach millions of listeners all around the world with your product for fractions of a penny per contact. We will even do pay for click. Costs you nothing to put your ad on X Squared Radio unless you sell something. We have lots of affiliates that work that way, and they sell hundreds and hundreds of items every single month, and they pay their commission checks. Very nice relationship. Tonight, we want to have open lines on three different subjects. The first is on UFOs. The second is the year 2012 and what it may mean for us. And the third is whatever you would like to talk about. That's the third subject, is you. Why UFOs? Well, we talk about UFOs from time to time here. Alien craft, unknown craft, off-world craft, even advanced aircraft that we suspect our government or other governments may have that they just don't tell us about. We're not into too much conspiracy theory here, but we have often said that if the UFO landed on the White House lawn and CNN caught it on film, then we would have what's called global first contact and everything would change. We've said that so many times that when it happened this week, we were a little surprised at the lack of reaction. Yes, I said that. CNN caught live daytime on their cameras a UFO flying directly across the Washington, D.C. Mall, right in front of the Washington Monument. And if you don't believe me, just go to x2-radio.com and the YouTube embed is right on the front page. Go ahead, click on it for yourself. Now, it's about a 10-minute YouTube, but the UFO, the craft, shows up in about the first minute. You'll see it. Just rewind it and play it back over and over again. Lots of people are doing it, but not enough, in my opinion. So when I saw the CNN footage of a craft, which appears to be about 125 feet long, going at an estimated speed of 400 miles an hour, fly directly over the heads, about 200 feet off the ground, directly over the heads of thousands of people that were walking on the grass, brown as it might be, in front of the Washington Monument. They never looked up. I played it over and over again. So I said, okay, here are some observations. First of all, a 125-foot-long craft flies 400 miles an hour, 200 feet off the heads of thousands of people in broad daylight. It gets caught on film. And people are saying, well, it's a bird. Well, if it's a bird, we've got a really marvelous bird on our planet that flies 400 miles an hour. It couldn't be a plane, because if it was a plane flying at that speed, three things would happen. First of all, it would be chased across the screen by aircraft from our Air Force trying to protect the sovereignty of our airspace. Second, it would have made such an ear-splitting, sky-tearing sound that those thousands of people on the grass below would have broken their necks and dove for the nearest bush trying to get out of the way because it would make so much noise. This flew silently right across the screen, right above those people's heads, and Wolf Blitzer and his interviewee were in talking mode, and it happened in the window right behind them, right on CNN. Go to X Squared Radio, x2-radio.com, and play the YouTube. And you can watch it for yourself. And then I want you to call in and tell me what you think you saw. Now, I have read about as much of the comments as anyone can stand on this subject. I have been watching the blogs, watching the analysis on this for hours and hours and hours the last few days. And the positive people say that it's the ETs blessing the Obama presidency. And some say they are flying over to let us know that they are here and watching and we're doing just fine. The negative people say either it's a fake or that it was made up by CNN themselves or that it just simply doesn't exist. So I did a little digging into the film archives here at X Squared Radio, and guess what I found? I found five pictures that were taken at James Gilliland's ranch in Trout Lake, Washington, of Mount Adams. They were taken by two separate digital cameras at the same time, on the same side of Mount Adams. In the photos, and some are left on my website as high-res images, so you can zoom in on them yourself. Just open it up with your Windows Viewer or your Adobe Viewer or your Mac Viewer and blow up the photograph yourself. There are five of them there. And on each one of these pictures, there are several craft. And guess what? These are broad daylight pictures. There's no wind. There are no birds. There are no planes. Just snow on Mount Adams in the middle of July. And these craft could not be seen with the naked eye. I got the shots on purpose, however. It wasn't an accident. I was shooting pictures of the mountain. Of course, up there, nice and beautiful in a clear blue sky with snow on the mountain. And, you know, my camera has these little green brackets. You push the button about halfway down, and little green brackets sort of do the focusing for you. They start out blue, and when it's okay to take the picture, they turn green. And they appear in the viewfinder, kind of, you know, tell me what it was chosen to focus on by the camera. For most of the pictures, it focused on the mountain, because that was the biggest thing in the pictures. But a few of the pictures, for some reason, a couple little brackets appeared, but were targeting something up in the sky above the mountain. But it wasn't visible in between the brackets. So I took the pictures anyway, several of them. When the pictures were opened for viewing on the camera and on the computer, there were these flying craft. But they have a fuzzy haze around them, as though they were behind some kind of opaque film. I thought they were fascinating then, but not until I saw a moving one pass across the DC Mall on CNN's cameras, which are much more high quality than my digital camera, did I really know what one looked like. There is a plasma around the craft that allows them to hide from human eyes. Our eyes sample at a rate of about 40 frames per second. We don't see lights flicker at 60 cycles per second. They just look like they're on all the time to us. We don't see the computer screen flicker at a rate of 70 cycles per second. It just looks nice and smooth and it's on all the time. Same thing with our LCD TVs and our plasma TVs. Same thing. High sample rate and we don't see the flicker with our eyes. But when you use a camera to look at that screen, not only is the sensitivity altered, increased, improved, more frequency range, but the sample rate is much faster as well, making it possible to see in between frames. Now, the frequency of the plasma pulse is high enough to be invisible to human eyes, but not high enough to be hidden from digital or film cameras. Hence, CNN unwittingly caught on film the same type of craft as we filmed at Trout Lake. Now that's fascinating. That is fascinating, people. All you have to do is go to x2-radio.com. It's right there on the front page on the right hand side. Go down and watch the CNN video. Play it back several times. Look at it for yourself. Tell me, call in tonight. The phone lines are open. And tell me what you think that craft flying across the DC Mall. Now, this should be mainstream news, the hot story out there. Now, we all know that lots and lots of UFOs are spotted. But they're spotted by amateurs here and there, at night, at a distance, maybe over Arizona, at night, kind of hard to film. This, people, is broad daylight. Now, what does this mean? Well, that is what I want you to tell me tonight. Of course, according to many ufologists, DC is the most active UFO spot on Earth. That doesn't make much sense to me, given the obvious intelligence attributed to Washington, D.C., but nevertheless, we have about twice as many sightings there as anywhere else in the U.S. I find it kind of interesting that with all of these sightings and lots of amateurs snapping pictures, and even some professional photographers snapping pictures, that now we have validation with the most widely respected news service in the world, CNN. Now, there are three schools of thought that I have been able to find out there. One is that the ETs are aliens to Earth and greatly concerned that we are trashing the planet or getting ready to have global war, and they are here to stop it, a la Day the Earth Stood Still. Two is that the ETs are not aliens, but rather beings from Earth's past or maybe an alternate dimension who took a parallel path to this year and live on this planet as well with us and are watching us all at the same time. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from. No caller? Hello, caller. Okay, well, that happens from time to time. The third school of thought is that they are galactic travelers who have been here all along, not only watching us, but have been intricately involved in our creation and are sort of watchers over our development. There's a subset of this school that believes that they live beneath the sea, beneath lakes. And
hello?
Yes, caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
Ramon from New York.
Good evening, Ramon. How are you?
Pretty good. I called earlier, but I couldn't hear you at all.
Well, we're trying a new sound system, and hopefully you can hear me now. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I hear you perfectly. I looked at the video, and it was going by too fast, but what I found interesting is that as soon as that went by, they changed the clip over to a helicopter. That was a little too fast to be a helicopter. And like you said, there was no sound at all from it. So
right.
If there was a bird, then we need to call the cryptozoologist.
So did you hit the pause button as it was going by so you can kind of freeze it in front of the Washington Monument and then freeze it a couple feet away? I mean, you could really, you know, get close up on this thing.
I don't have the programs to get in close as I would like to. But what I was going to say, I was going to make an analogy of the truth is it's like having the son or the daughter who's gay and the parents in denial. You know, it's like, well, you know, they're just good friends with those kind of people. Or, you know, not saying anything negative about it, but it's the same as a parent being in denial. And the country itself is in denial, and no matter what evidence you have, because I've discussed with people from Columbia University about it, and they'll tell me, like, oh, we don't have evidence. Well, what about burn marks? Oh, well, they got chemicals that can do those things. Oh, what about pictures? Oh, people can fake it. What about this? Well, you know, and anything you show them, it's not good enough. And
well, I know exactly where you're coming from there, and I sort of sympathize with that too, because you know I'm a scientist and I want proof too. I want to see you know, a fingernail. I want to see a window, a piece of metal, something, surely. But these are not amateurs that took this picture. This is CNN. This is mainstream news that photographed this 400-mile-an-hour shape whipping across the D.C. Mall.
It's kind of, I saw one, I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube, it's out of Turkey, and the woman's interviewing, these three ships just come up pretty close, not directly above her, but close enough where you can see the size, and they all run, everybody that sees it turns and runs towards it, and a camera focuses right on it, and the comments, of course, oh, it's fake, it was made, And I've heard a lot of people talk about it as like, okay, this is the evidence. Oh, well, I guess it's not because it was fake or, you know, they made up some excuse why that's not real.
That is so interesting. That is so interesting. I mean, and I seem to me I remember some footage from Mexico City where there was a really low-flying, wobbling craft, and it was actually caught by the mainstream news in Mexico City. And the anchor even came on and commented on it, and it still didn't get any national play, as though that was faked.
So in my personal view, we have enough evidence to say that's something, whether it's from another planet or our own crafts or something, but it's something that's out of the ordinary for us.
I was going to say, one of my good friends, Jose Escamilla, he is the one that broke the story on the phenomenon of rods. And this thing flew a lot like a rod, but he actually took high-resolution close-ups of rods flying, and you can actually see the membrane on the side of the rods as they fly by. This was really big. This thing was about at least, I would say, 100 feet to 125 feet long, based on the comparison of how close it was to the Washington Monument and how large it was.
Well, I guess it's going to be a historical, because if I had the technology to go back in time, you know, for some reason, I don't know, if it's just popping up now, well, let me explain what I mean. I almost feel like, okay, these things that they've been reporting, like Columbus saw a UFO before reaching America, there's been a few others, Alexander the Great, and I'm just starting to hear about them. And I almost feel like they just happened, even though it didn't happen in my time frame. So whoever is able to go back in time is going back in time looking at these things, and then all of a sudden it comes up in our books. Do you understand what I mean?
Sure, I do. We were having this discussion today, and we were talking about anthropology and archaeology, and my oldest son brought up the idea that why didn't we learn about this stuff in school? And we were kind of talking about Michael Cremo's book, Forbidden Archaeology, where he talks about, man-made objects, clearly man-made objects like jewelry and chains and tools and things like that, that were over 50 million years old, human footprints.
Like the petrified hammer?
Yeah, petrified hammer, this... things, human bodies, intact, of course, petrified, found in clay, undisturbed clay layers that were 30 million years old, and verified by the university archaeologists, anthropologists that went out there and helped with the dig. Actually independent validation of it, and still it does not end up in the history books.
It's like I said, it's like we don't want to know. Like, well, you know, you have the elephant under the rug, and if you ignore it, it'll go away. Wait, it's growing. No, it'll go away, don't worry about it. And that's our mentality, and I'm speaking in general, as far as like the United States, because I know I've spoken to Mexicans, and they're very open about it. Just a common person is very open about it. They're not critical of it. But I speak to the common American here about it, and they laugh at me. I can't even talk about it, because, like, oh, yeah, that's Ray and his crazy alien stuff.
Yeah, I have a lot of astronomer friends, because we do some dark sky events with our telescopes, and we go out and look at stars and satellites. And to a man, they do not want to hear about UFOs. To them, that is, you know, completely bad science. And Earth is a fluke, and we're alone in the universe.
I've always said one thing. If we are alone in the universe, then that means every single person can have their own galaxy, and everybody go on to their own galaxy, and we'll have no more problems. If that is true. So if that's true, I'm going to fly to my own galaxy, and I want nobody to come near it.
That's interesting. I'd like to take one or two people, though, just to be able to play pool and have someone to talk to. Kind of interesting.
Yeah,
so, but you bring up an interesting comment about it does seem from time to time that an alternate past keeps bleeding into our present. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, it's like they keep leaving evidence. Like, wow, are you really that ignorant? Like, look at another clue. Oh no, that's nothing. That's a flying duck or something. We really don't want to hear it. We just, you know, talk about whatever else you want, but I don't want to hear anything when it comes to that. Like, that's the mentality, and it drives me nuts. But I do feel, speaking of Obama, I was trying to get in contact with you. I emailed you. They had, like, a website where you go on and you voted before his inauguration. You voted for the top stuff, and UFO disclosure was one of them, and it got, I think it was something like each person was 10 points, and it got something like 28,000 points, I believe, if I remember correctly. But don't quote me on how many points exactly. But it was pretty high up there with other things. So, and they had several disclosure. So hopefully he'll look at that and see that people really do want disclosure. And I've seen on YouTube people saying, mail Obama about disclosure, mail, you know, his staff chief, you know, mail everybody up there about disclosure. So it seems like for this one, we're really pushing it more on him. So, like a lot of people said, if anyone is to disclose, it would be him. Now, if something comes up, like he had an affair or something like that, or he was stealing or, you know, something to take away from that, then I was like, okay, he was going to disclose, and now they did this to him. Kind of like I feel like they did to Clinton with the whole Monica Lewinsky thing. How do you feel?
That's interesting. Yeah, I had kind of similar feelings, and I had somebody tell me one time, well, that's why Kennedy was assassinated, because he was going to release information about UFOs, and the military, or maybe the shadow military, didn't want it to be disclosed, and that's why Kennedy was summarily dispatched. I don't know if I believe that or not. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't believe that, but I have heard it. And I hope that Obama goes in to Washington with a fresh enough and independent enough and bold enough confidence that he could say, okay, guys, it's time to open that vault. Let's let Tom Carey have access to the Roswell craft, and let's get this over with. Amnesty for everyone, let's get it over with. Let's get it behind us.
Yeah, because we really need the technology if anything else. And the other thing is, just imagine if we were a country that didn't trade with any other country, not even Canada or Mexico. What kind of country would this be? So if we open up a planet to other species and other types of entity, can you imagine the richness in culture that we would have, the boom? Like, that alone would do so much for the economy, just the knowing the fact that there's other species out there, that no longer you're this dot, speck of dust, alone in this universe. There's actually other species that do things completely different. I mean, you can go to Japan and see a whole completely different culture. Not even that far. You can go to another state and see how different they are from, for example, like, I'm a New Yorker. So can you imagine going to a different planet and or reading about their cultures, not just, oh, well, this person from this farm area or says that their culture is like this, but actual real proof that their culture is like this?
Oh, yes, I can, and I do all the time, I imagine that. I often sit out and wonder and kind of expand my consciousness, if you will, my dreaming, my ability to astral travel. And, yeah, I do. I reach out there and say, what is another planet like? What are the oceans like? Are they oceans of methane, or are they oceans of water? How do you travel from one planet to, how do you communicate? How did you overcome your your innate desire to have war and to own things and to have exclusivity and classes? I'm often reminded of Marco Polo and his travels when he sailed up the river into China. And he was so amazed at the size and scope of Chinese architecture. And he returned and said, I am so thankful that they are not warlike.
One last thing. It has to do with UFOs, but more on like new technologies. I heard something yesterday where to make hydrogen, to separate the water molecule in order to use for as gas, that instead of like shocking it with a high voltage of electricity, you vibrate it at its frequency to make it separate. I forgot what kind of sound they called it. I guess it's a low ultra-frequent sound or something like that. I'm not getting the math correctly, but somehow you vibrate it to the right frequency of the water and you get the separation using less energy than you would, like, putting a couple joules of electricity into the water in order to separate it.
Well, that is interesting, and I do believe it is possible to stress the water molecule to where it separates into hydrogen and oxygen. I do know a couple of technologies out there. I've actually seen them with my own eyes. I have one that I've installed on my Dodge Cummins diesel pickup truck. I have to tell you that that hydrogen injection, as far as I know, and I know quite a bit that I've picked up and that I've researched on, it is not possible to make enough hydrogen to continuously power the vehicle. But you can make hydrogen over a period of time, several hours or half a day, and then you can drive your vehicle for a couple of hours on the stored hydrogen. Now keep in mind that it's virtually impossible to store enough hydrogen to travel further than about 80 or 90 miles unless you've got a pretty good sized truck, because you just can't carry enough hydrogen to get that far. The unit that I use has a series of very closely spaced parallel plates. It only uses about 9 amps, which is very, very small. It makes about 5 liters of what's called boom gas. That's hydrogen and oxygen in gaseous form. And then that's drawn through the turbocharger into the intake and then compressed in the engine. And, of course, as soon as it's exposed to combustion temperatures, it recombines as water. It releases a tremendous amount of energy and actually has greatly boosted my fuel mileage up to about a little over 30 miles to the gallon. It also makes the engine sound differently. It smooths it out and makes it quieter. And it adds a lot of power. I'd say, somewhere between 10 and 12% more power. So it's kind of nice to have. As far as frequency being used to separate water into atoms again, oxygen and hydrogen atoms, I know two technologies. One is by Zero Point Research in Santa Monica, California. He used actually a rotating DC field to do his, and he used it with the tungsten electrodes in the water, And it literally just burned the tungsten electrodes up in just a very short amount of time. It released a tremendous amount of energy. And besides being very cool to look at, it was not very practical. So we'll see how this technology comes about. But that's where it is as far as hydrogen. A great supplement and a great primary fuel, but only about 80 miles of range. Now, what I do with about 1 gallon, actually a little less than one, about 3 liters of water, is it goes about 400 miles, almost a full tank of fuel. So it works really well as a supplement. And that's all I know about it.
What I, it's a little, because I've heard all those you spoke about, this was completely different. It's what they were using was heavy water, and because of the sound frequency, I'm going to try explaining it the best I can. It makes the hydrogen like a hydrogen bubble somehow, and when that bubble pops, it creates way more energy than normal hydrogen would. I'm not sure how exactly that works, but the way the gentleman was explaining it is the guy who invented it had it in something about the size of a little bigger than an iPhone, for example, a little thicker. And it was about that big, and it reused the same water over and over again, because once it combusted it reformed back into water. So you would never have to, like, re-put water. But somehow he was able to get so much energy out of it. I've never seen it, so I can't say it's true, but...
Well, if he's out there listening, if anyone is out there listening that knows this guy, get him in touch with us. Let us interview him. Heck, I'll fly to his lab. I'll check it out. You know, I've got I've got capabilities of bringing stuff like that to manufacturing. I just finished building a biodiesel plant up in Odessa, Washington, and I'm building another one right here in southern Idaho. This one's a lot bigger. It also does cellulosic ethanol, and it also does biomass. But it's
I'll look it up on the internet. If I find it, I'll email it to you. So I'll put it like
fantastic.
So thank you very much, and I'll keep on listening.
All right, thanks, Ramon. Thanks for the call. So, you know, there. If there's another caller out there, please, studio, let me know, because this is a very, it's a popular subject, but I don't want to keep rehashing the old stuff, because that's what everyone else does. But I really do want to get to the point where we understand the importance of this CNN film. I understand there are going to be a lot of people out there that just say, oh, you know, that's nothing but a supersonic duck flying across the Washington Mall, nothing to concern ourselves with, and carry on as, you know, life as usual. But do what Ramon did. Go to the website, x2-radio.com, and look at the YouTube. Now, there are two YouTubes there. I wanted to tell you about the second one. Because the second one is a video that was shown in a lecture. We have it on there so that you can see the contrast between what appeared over the mall on CNN and what was filmed for what looks like about 45 seconds, a definite flying saucer kind of shape, with lights around the front edge of it. You have a street light in the foreground for perspective, so it's not just hanging out there in empty space. The photographer's credentials are unimpeachable. He's not one that would fabricate something like this. This craft is hovering in a 30-mile-an-hour wind, and it isn't moving. So you've got two YouTubes there, x2-radio.com. Give a look, and then call into the program. If you want to reach us on the regular phone lines, the phone number is 530-776-5154, and that reaches us from anywhere on the planet, and most people have free long distance, so please use that number. You can also reach us on Skype at BBS Radio or Pal Talk, BBS Radio _com. So don't be a stranger. If you've never called in before, it's no problem. I'm really easy to talk to. And we'll go anywhere you want to go, because the third hour is going to be completely open. Anything you guys want to talk about, we'll talk about in the news. As you know, we have recently changed presidencies. There is strong talk. I'm actually quite surprised that they even had it on Obama's website. But it appears that there's strong talk about continuing with disclosure. You know very well that this program is a very, very strong proponent for disclosure of all of the UFO information that the government has their hands on. Yes, I know there are probably military secrets in there we don't want anyone to know about, but for crying out loud, people, can't we just, you know, release the information and let the public decide for themselves? Offer a little bit of amnesty to those people who need it, so that nobody goes down because, you know, somebody kept information away from the public as though that's a crime, and let it out. Let's just understand what's going on out there, okay? Let's get it behind us. We are coming up to the end of the first hour, so I want to make sure that you know that we've made some changes to the website. For one thing, we don't have any advertisers on the website unless you go all the way to the bottom. Those are the ones that have been our trusty advertisers for a long time. They pay their commissions, and we're happy to have them on there, those folks from Intuitive Design and Remote Viewing. I believe we have another caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
I read a book recently that I thought you might find interesting. It has the best explanation for how these UFOs travel across the universe, and I thought I would share it with you. It's called The Human Quantum Leap by A.J. Ansour. Have you heard of that book yet?
The Human Quantum Leap.
Right, it has a subtitle called Confessions of an Intelligence Operative, and it's written by an ex-Marine named A.J. Ansour.
What's the last name? A.J. what?
Ansour, E-N-S-O-R.
Interesting. My nuclear chemistry instructor, his last name was Enzer, Dr. Enzer. I don't think he was... former military, though. He did work for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but not for them. So tell me a little bit more. How was this book interesting?
Well, the last chapter in the book is the one that I found to be so fascinating, because it explained how these crafts travel across the universe. And The author, A.J. Ansour, was an ex-Marine, and he kept in touch with another Marine who eventually went up the ranks and got enough clearance where he was actually involved in some of the Black Ops programs. And this other Marine that the book calls Josh had the job of guarding an E.T. anthropologist that was here working with our government. But anyway, this E.T. anthropologist went on to explain to Josh how his people got here. And that last chapter in the book, and it's a whole chapter, kind of explains the way they travel. And according to this book, these E.T.s travel in what they call the first dimension. And according to this book, there's really only four dimensions. One is width, and then we have height, and then we have length, and then we have this first dimension, which is what all of our universe came from. And what the ET ships actually do is they surround their ships in what they call a graviton bubble.
Huh.
And then they dive into, yes, and then they dive into the gravity wells of planets, and they can leap across the universe in that first dimensional space with literally no time passing. And I thought that was very, very fascinating.
Wow.
The book goes into great detail. Yeah, isn't that something? So really,
can they actually go through time, or did you just bypass time?
Well, according to this book, this first dimensional space is all of the gravity wells of all the planets and all the stars. They intersect this first dimensional space. And these gravity wells connect to this dimension into something the book calls a quantum singularity. It's much like a tornado reaches down into this, you know, to the Earth. And this quantum singularity somehow is occurring everywhere in the universe simultaneously. So when
amazing.
They, yeah, it's absolutely astonishing. They wrap their ships in this gravity bubble, which they call the graviton bubble, which is one of the, they call this the other, one of the other states of matter. I guess we have solid, gas, liquid, and then we have plasma, and then they have something that they call gravity-affected matter. And
huh.
Literally, these ships somehow, when they get into this graviton bubble, they dive into the gravity well of a planet, and they can come out somewhere else on the other side of the universe, hundreds of light years away, with practically no time passing.
So I'm curious, because I had talked about something similar to this years ago, where space was kind of like a big latex bubble, and what you do is you locate a spot and you pull that other side of the latex bubble towards you with immense gravity and actually an exotic matter kind of engine. And then you just make the jump from one side of the latex to the other side, and then you let the bubble go back to where it was. So you kind of ride the compression and expansion of this latex bubble. The problem is that there's not enough energy in the average galaxy to make a bubble pull the universe, the fabric of the universe, towards you like that. And the other question I have is, if you got this from the book, and now I've got the book written down and the author, I'm going to get it and read it, and if the guy's around there, I want to interview him. How do you steer it? How do you know where it is you're going to end up when you dive into this bubble?
Well, they kind of explain that. They say that every planet and every star has what they call a core magnetic signature, and it's just like the fingerprint of a human being. And they can literally somehow sense that fingerprint, that core magnetic signature, all the way across the universe. And something about the nature of this first dimensional space is a lot like our internet, in that you and I can be looking at the same web page, but be thousands of miles away.
Sure.
And that's probably about the best that I can do to try to explain this whole idea. And I've read that chapter like 10 times at least.
Wow.
And I've tried to absorb it all. I don't think they literally move space. Somehow they explained before the Big Bang that the universe was this flat, shapeless void.
Right.
That had pockets of incredible energy, and then at one point two of these pockets of tremendous energy somehow hit each other, contacted each other, which caused this huge bang, which is our universe, this three-dimensional space. But somehow these ETs are able to go back to the original first-dimensional space. Now, you know, I'm not a physicist. That's about as far as I can get. I'm sure you have.
Let's go into it a little bit more. Right now, let me go ahead and take about a 3-minute break, and that way, you know, people can refresh themselves, and I can make the recording work right for people who are listening to the archives. But we'll go ahead and take about a 3-minute, 23-second break, and we'll be back with more with Mark. Don't go away.
All right.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. That's Groove Maneuver. They help us out with a lot of our bumper music. We appreciate all the work that they do. If you want to know more about it, you can go to GarageBand.com and learn more about alternative music. That music happens to be industrial rock, which one of my favorites. In the first hour, we were talking about UFOs, specifically about the CNN footage of the UFO that appeared over the Washington, D.C. Mall in front of the Washington Monument. We've had a couple of callers. And in our last hour, we had Mark on, and we're going to bring him back as we're talking about folding space and traveling across the expanses of the universe. Mark, are you still there?
Oh yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so we're reviewing this book that you read called The Human Quantum Leap by A.J. Enzor, and in this book he describes how it is possible to travel across the great expanses of space with a very little energy, similar to the way we surf the internet. So let me ask you, how did Dr. or this author, Mr. Enzer, describe how he came across this information?
Well, he had a very close friend who was still in the Marines. And this other Marine he called Josh. That wasn't his real name, but just for the sake of hiding his identity, he called him Josh. Now, Josh eventually got into the Black Ops programs, and his job was guarding an ET anthropologist that they called John. And this particular individual, the Marine didn't even know he was an ET until, I don't want to give away the whole book, but they were in the outback of Australia, and John, this ET anthropologist, loved to go on these long walks. One thing led to another, and they ran into a wild boar. This particular boar attacked John, the anthropologist, and Josh, the Marine who was supposed to guard him, killed the boar. But he noticed that this individual was bleeding, and the blood that was coming out was almost black. And at that point, the Marine took his sidearm and put it to the head of the ET and said, "Tell me who you are." Because, and it kind of explained that in these Black Ops programs, if you learn more than you're supposed to know, that your life is in danger. And John, the CT anthropologist, eventually calms down Josh and proceeds to tell him the whole story of who he really is and why he's really here. And that's where this information allegedly comes from. Anyway, it's quite interesting.
Yeah,
pretty wild
it
story.
Is interesting. So the ET anthropologist is here on this planet gathering information, learning about the species that exist here on the Earth. He could breathe oxygen and may or may not respirate the same way that we do. Obviously, the Marine was around him long enough to realize that, you know, he eats tacos the same way we do. But what he learns is such common knowledge, even to one such as an anthropologist, that that they have a method of traveling across the great expanse of space by utilizing the first dimension. So
right.
Those of you that know a little bit about dimensions know that the first dimension is a point, like a singularity, like a dimensionless spot. So it's sort
right.
of like climbing the 2-meter board, going to the edge of the board and diving off into a shot glass of water. So I kind of want to understand how they pick a point in space and focus all their energy on it and go through it. And I'd kind of also like to know how it is they work this quasi-world wide web, because when we surf the web, you mentioned that we might be looking at the same website, although thousands of miles apart. There is a search engine out there through which we can find the website. It is well known that most of the internet, probably close to 75% of the internet, is not available through search engines. You have to know the exact address to get there. These sites are not crawled by the search engines. So somewhere out there, somebody's got to have enough experience, somebody's got to have a way of looking at the whole map, like a giant GPS map, to know where it is they want to go, and better yet, how to get back. So is there a mention of how they do that?
Well, I'll do my best here to try to explain this. The first dimension, we think of our universe in the distance between planets as being, you know, many, many light years, hundreds of light years. But somehow when you enter the first dimension, these vast distances don't really exist per se. And they're able to literally just leap across the universe. And this information is consistent with the Billy Myers material. If you listen to Randy Winters, he has a long video on Google Video, and the way that Billy explains how the Plejarans jump across space-time is they accelerate their ships right up to the speed of light, and then they convert their ships into something they call fine matter, and this fine matter enters what they call null space, which I think is the same as this first-dimensional space, and then they can literally leap across the universe and with almost no time passing. So I think they're talking about the same thing. They might end up doing it two different ways. But it was real interesting to see kind of this book explaining the same thing that the Billy Myers material is explaining. And the way they locate planets, again, is by that core magnetic signature, which I guess would correspond to almost like an address on a website. You know, you talked about the galactic internet there. That's probably my best explanation of that. One thing we didn't talk about, I don't want to take a poll night here, but this particular ET, they viewed his body, much like we would view a spacesuit. And he was literally genetically modified in order to exist in our, our atmosphere and whatnot.
Well, weren't we all?
Yeah, exactly. And but it sounds strange because if you go ahead and read the book, they talked about John, this ET, that he wasn't just one person. That he had his consciousness was somehow linked to the consciousness of another ET across this long distance of the universe, across what they call the galactic internet. And they say that our society is on the verge of discovering, quote-unquote, the galactic internet, and to look for the day that we start using artificial diamonds in computers, because somehow that will open up this whole concept. I've probably left more mysteries than answers, but certainly is an interesting book.
Well, no, not really, because there are actually three aspects that make sense in the physics world. One is the aspect of non-locality. It actually explains a couple of aspects of what you brought up. In physics, and we first noticed this, probably 20, 25 years ago, we noticed that when we pick particles off of what are known as entangled particles, and we separate them an infinite distance apart, and by infinite I don't mean tremendously far, I mean infinite. The first time they were separated, they were just captured with an electron capture detector, and the spin of one particle was electromagnetically switched, and its sister particle switched instantaneously. It became so repeatable that for advanced physics students, it's almost a staple experiment to try. Then in 1999, two particles were separated by 11 kilometers, and they did it again, two beryllium ions. So the idea of non-locality, that somehow, even across the expanse of space, and by that I mean across galaxies, way, way, way beyond the heliosphere, into other solar systems, other galaxies, if you switch the spin on a particle, its sister particle will switch exactly, instantaneously, at the same time. Now, the idea, the theory is right now that these particles are actually created in the same supernova event. And as you know, when a star goes supernova, this giant pulse of energy goes out in 360 degrees all directions, consuming matter as much as it can be energetic to do so and converting it to pure energy. That energy is responsible for creating all the higher order elements, everything above iron, and creating heavier protons like those found in hydrogen. Those are the heaviest protons that we know of, going down to iron and then slowly creeping back up to the heavier elements, but not as high as hydrogen. So all protons are not created equally, and therefore neutrons as well. So that theory of non-locality makes complete sense. And then you mentioned that artificial diamonds were used in computers, and this is something that is being done right now. We're on the verge of doing this, but it is going to be a major rewrite, and here's why. The airwave that we're talking over right now is actually voice over internet. It's actually ones and zeros. It's all binary. Zeros and ones, on and off. Our computers are that way. Our cell phones are that way. Everything digital, every circuit that we've got that's integrated, that's microscopic, is binary. It's a on or off switch. Now, there's a new dimension. There is trinary. That is to say, three different states. Now we have a minus one, a zero, and a plus one. And it is quickly expanding to even more. Now, I don't know if you know what this means, but it means that the language of communication, that is to say, if you downloaded Tiger Woods EA Golf, okay, you realize that this is about a 5-gig game. And that's because it's all ones and zeros, especially if you have the HD model for the PlayStation 3. You realize how much smaller this game file size will be once you get to trinary and quaternary energy states, switchable states. Once you start putting artificial diamonds into computers and you start realizing tertiary and quaternary states of logic, it's like being able to go from old copper wire to going to fiber optics as to how much data you can handle at one time. Now you get a fast enough computer and fast enough read speeds, the RAM speeds, that you can do this kind of planetary read. Now there's one more aspect that you mentioned, and that's that each planet has its own signature. That makes complete sense, because spectrographically, no two planets would be alike. They couldn't be. It's just virtually impossible that they would be made of the same elements in the same ratios that they would have the same signature. Not possible. Earth and the Moon have radically different spectrographic signatures. They're completely different molecular makeups. So everything that you've said makes complete sense. I just want to get started.
Well, Dr. Ardu, it's been great talking to you. I don't want to take up all your time. It's been extremely fascinating, and I thank you for letting me call in, and I'll go back to listening to the show. Thanks a bunch.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
So, good night. So there we are, Earth Explorers. I mean, you have the idea has been around for a long time. It's been around through movies and books and other media. I know in the 50s there was the War of the Worlds that Orson Welles orated over the radio, and people went berserk. They panicked because the ETs were here and they were hostile, and oh my goodness, thank God for viruses and for bacteria. They took them out for us. We saw that with Tom Cruise's remake of the movie, which I thought was pretty good. I thought it was really neat. I really liked the fear and the reality of the energy of it. But we're a different race now. We're emancipated, so to speak, on the galactic scale. ETs don't really frighten us anymore, even if they're just a little bit hostile. I mean, we got some badass weapons ourselves, and we can kind of take care of ourselves. No, not if they're going to drop, you know, photon torpedoes from 2 light-years away. We don't have a prayer. But if they want to come down here and go mano a mano, we are well adapted for this planet. And as Mark was mentioning, even the ET anthropologist had to be genetically engineered to be able to handle this planet, as were we all. And we're not particularly suited for life in the wild, regardless of what cable channel you've been watching. We are suited for the warmth of an electric heater as I look out across the frozen tundra here in southern Idaho, where it is about 28 degrees Fahrenheit and been snowing all day long, and going to snow for a couple more days if I had to survive out there in the wild right now. I would need a whole lot of clothing because I'm not genetically made to handle the temperatures of this planet, not even in the summertime. I need large amounts of water and a shady place. And if it's going to be hot, I'd just soon be next to the ocean. But I'm not. So you have all of these things to consider, which means that the idea that intelligent life, mobile, on purpose, sentient life could come to this planet and be traveling around this planet right now is completely feasible and not particularly frightening to the average human. So we talked about three schools of thought in the first hour, and that was that one is that ETs are aliens to Earth, at least the UFOs that we're seeing. And they are greatly concerned that we are trashing the planet or getting ready to have global war, and they are here to stop it, a la Day the Earth Stood Still. The second school of thought is that the ETs are not aliens, but rather beings from Earth's past who took a parallel path to this year and live on this planet as well as we do and are watching us all the same. It's pretty easy to think that, you know, it's not that hard to hide among us, especially if you look like us. When I used to travel across country with the kids, oftentimes we'd be in between areas where there's radio. And even if we were listening to the radio, it was probably the same song over and over and over again. And besides, how interesting can that be for small kids? So they would say, "Dad, tell us a story." And so I made up the story of the freeway people, and this was the land that's in between the interstates, east and west side or north and south side. Oftentimes it's just a little patch of grass or a concrete wall, but sometimes there are trees and there's significant amount of property, and sometimes you can't even see the other direction of traffic for many, many miles. And so I made up the idea of the freeway people, a whole population of people that live in between the freeways as you travel down the road. Someday we'll publish those stories. But for now, it serves a purpose that there could be ETs among us. And by that, extraterrestrials, I mean other race on this planet that are not involved so sociologically as we are in our little towns and our hamlets and our cities. They live among us and learn what they can or monitor us or input where they can, but they've taken a different path. They separated themselves some millennia ago and they are highly advanced and their genetics have made a right-hand turn compared to ours, so to speak. And the third school of thought is that they are galactic travelers who have been here all along for multiple amounts of time, not only watching us, but have been integrally involved in our creation and or evolution and are sort of watchers over our development. And there's a subset of this school that believes that they live beneath the sea, lakes, and even the North Pole, beneath the near frozen ocean. And that's where they reside, and that's where their ships are, and that's where their cities are. And even that they could be inside the Earth, under the crust. that to live on the surface of a world is rather rare in the universe, because most planets don't have conditions on the surface conducive to, you know, life on the beach. They have tremendous amounts of solar radiation from their sun, or maybe their sun doesn't put out enough heat because it's too far away, as though you lived on the surface of Mars or the surface of the moon. It could be rather harsh. You'd have to have an exoskeleton and a space suit of some kind to be able to supply you what your biology needs in order to survive. But beneath the crust, miles beneath the surface, you'd be protected from all of those elements, and there'd be plenty of energy, if you had the technology, to sustain life for many millions of years, many thousands of generations. So let's talk about this for a while. UFOs are so common now that they're almost boring. Not so in 1950 or 1947 when the Roswell crash occurred. Yes, people had coined the term flying saucers, and there were little green men from Mars, and, you know, but there was a general fear of this. There was a general, yeah, it could be true, but I've never seen one. Now, millions upon millions of people have had sightings, and they've seen movies and read books and watched television, popular series, and we're conditioned. We are now awakened. We're now not fearful of it. In fact, if someone were to come up to even the most straight-laced conservative person now and say, gee, I saw a UFO last night, they would say, isn't that nice? That's nice. That's good to hear. You're not even considered crazy anymore if you believe in it. Belief, non-belief, knowledge, non-knowledge, it's not so bogus as it used to be. So it's almost boring. But here is the bottom line. There's no ship to show. Yes, we have paintings, carvings, drawings. We have millions of eyewitness testimonies. And Lord knows how many TV, film, and radio shows on the subject. But for all that, there's not one stick of metal, not one piece of glass, not one single fingernail from an alien anywhere, anywhere on the Earth. We might have a skull of a hybrid, but we don't have, for CNN, a live alien, or a live, shall we call them, an ET, an extraterrestrial, a being who lives here on Earth and may have for many, many generations, but obviously isn't from our neighborhood. We don't have that. We don't have that. I mean, yes, there are some pretty strange people out there, but not what we would consider off-worlders. So, Earth explorers, I'm not wanting to apply Occam's razor here, but the pickings are getting pretty slim. And the government's case that there's no such thing is looking really strong. That is, until the CNN footage caught one in broad daylight above the mall in D.C. The funny thing is, I should say the strange thing is, that the newsies are looking at the same film that we have posted at x2-radio.com. It's a YouTube embed of the CNN footage. You can see it for yourself. A 400 plus mile an hour craft between 100 and 125 feet long, zooming right over the mall between the CNN camera and the Washington Monument. And there are some stark observations to be made here. First of all, the people are not looking up and scattering like a bunch of scared ants on the ground, so there was no sound, and it's quite possible that no one on the grass even saw it with the naked eye. It took a digital camera in order to see it. This is consistent with other inputs, and I have those on the website as well. There are five photographs, some of them still in high resolution, so you can zoom in on it yourself and look at the craft. Look at the similarities between the craft and the pictures, and the craft on the CNN film. Very, very strong resemblance. Same plasma field, same shape, and same ability to only be seen with digital equipment, not the human eye. So that's the interesting thing. The newsies are looking at the same film we have posted, and they see nothing. Yeah, nothing. Like natives on the shore, unable to see the sailing ships. They just either close their eyes or their brains don't make the connection. They don't even ask the question. Wolf Blitzer is sitting there talking to his interviewee about Obama's dual message to the Muslim community, and behind him a UFO sails right across the Washington Mall, and they never miss a beat. No one even mentions it. Very interesting. Now, this is not the only very convincing footage out there. There's also another YouTube posting at x2-radio.com. It's right below it. Go there and look at it yourself. It's only 3 minutes long. In that video, right after this gentleman is presenting his PowerPoint presentation, there is a ship that is hovering in a 30-mile-an-hour wind, and it was caught on film. And I understand that the filmmaker, the actual person that shot the film, has impeccable credentials. He makes several attempts to zoom in on the craft and can't quite get it to focus, so he stays a little distance away. You can see a street light in the foreground of the picture, so at least he has some form of reference, a frame of reference for focus. So all of that is there for you to look at. So here we are, and we're trying to answer the question. And we have the open phone lines. You can reach us at 530-776-5154 from anywhere on the planet. Most of you have free long distance, free nights and weekends. Make use of it. Call in tonight and let's discuss it. You've got some thoughts on it. Tell me there's no ship in that picture. Tell me that we have some subsonic duck out there that can fly 400 miles an hour, and you've got one in your backyard, and I'll believe you. But right now, I don't think there are any winged mammals, reptiles, or feathered beings on this planet that can do 400 miles an hour. At least, not according to most zoologists. So, have a look. Go to the website, x2.net. We'll leave it on there for several weeks. So those of you that are listening to this as an archive, Monday morning when you come in and work at your computer station, you'll have that film to look at as well. We don't want you to miss it. I don't think these YouTube embeds last forever, especially with CNN. They kind of expunge those from time to time, especially if there's something controversial in there that's not political. And tell me what you think. If you can't call in tonight live, then write me. I've got contact information there on the website. Please, if you've got an analysis or you've got a better picture of one or video of your own, or if you were actually there the day of Obama's inauguration and you saw something, we want you to call in. We want you to write us. So, go ahead and pay some attention to that, and let's get this out of the way. We also want to cover just slightly. Obama had a website up on which were popular topics, and what he really wanted to do, I think, was excellent. It was sort of an immediate listening tour, an open ear to the public. What do you think is important? What do you want us to look at? By the way, I should mention that global warming was a dead last. And not to say that the planet's climate isn't changing, isn't oscillating, isn't doing some really strange things right now. Because as you heard in the opening of the first hour, it actually snowed in an area that it has never snowed before. It snowed so long ago, they don't even have a word for it. It's very interesting. This was the area known as Jebel Jais, and the woman, her name was Aisha Al-Hebsi, a woman in her 50s, said snowfall in the area was so unheard of, the local dialect doesn't even have a word for it. They don't even have a word for snow. That's how rare snow is in that area. So here we have it. The weather is changing. The weather is doing some very, very strange things. And we don't really know why, but we are fairly well convinced now, most scientists now, that global warming isn't really global warming. It's just radical oscillations in Earth's temperature. And we don't really know what's causing it. We're pretty sure that it's not mankind, although mankind can exacerbate things by polluting the very waste streams through which this energy flows around our planet. But it seems that all the planets in the solar system are warming now, and as far as I know, we're not affecting those planets unless we're affecting them with our consciousness. So this is what you have. You have a bottom line that Earth is going through some pretty radical changes, and as we near 2012, and that's what we're going to talk about in our third hour, the events of 2012, what is in store for us. If you listened to the program 2 weeks ago, you caught a broadcast from the year 2015, and we went over the next 3 to 4 years of events, not only politically, but also climatologically and sociologically, and we tried to prepare you for the coming 2012. Now, there are lots and lots of so-called experts out there. I don't think they are. I've read their stuff. Most of it's a lot of rot. If you really want to read books on 2012, nonfiction books that collect all the information and make it readable for you, you need to read The Ark of Millions of Years. It's now a trilogy. Book one is called New Discoveries in Light on the Creation. Book two is called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times. And book three is called Unlocking the Secret. They are available at arcofmillionsofyears.com. You can buy them from that website. If you buy the books from that website at ARK, that's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, arcofmillionsofyears.com, you will get not only all three books in either soft cover or hard cover, shipped anywhere here in the United States for the same price. You will also get the audio versions of book one and book two for free. You'll get them as soon as you make the PayPal purchase. And if you don't get it, I'll resend it to you. We are working on the audio for book three, but it's not out yet. We're still working on it. You know, it takes about 30 hours in the studio to make a single take on the book. So it does take a while. We do want to have a high-quality recording for you. The covers of the book have been redone. Excellent, excellent artwork by Roy Young. If you were listening to Coast a couple of months ago when I was on, I talked about the fantastic art of Roy Young on these books. They're just excellent. These are the 2012 books. There are a lot of wannabes out there. There are a lot of people that have copied and mimicked and taken from our website, taken from our books, and they don't give us any bylines. That's okay. I want the information to get out there. These are the books. About 1,500 pages in all. It reads easily, and you'll get all the knowledge that's out there, going all the way back to the Zohar, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Popol Vuh, the Bible, the Book of Mormon. You're going to get all that information. You don't have to go out and read 45 books and make yourself a scholar on the 2012 issue. If you want to be an expert, however, you need to read these three books. And if you can't read or you're not a big reader, Don't worry about it. I read it for you. You're going to get the audiobooks for free when you buy the printed versions. Only if you buy from the website, arcofmillionsofyears.com. If you buy from Amazon, and you're totally free to do that, you're going to get the books slightly cheaper, although you're going to pay shipping on top of that. You're not going to get the audio versions. You're going to be stuck reading it for yourself. And although they read really well, it's really, really nice to have 25 or 30 CDs that you can listen to in your car, or better yet, one MP3 device or a little thumb drive that you plug into the front of your stereo in your vehicle. And now you've got the best audio book in the world on the subject of 2012. ArcofMillionsOfYears.com. Get your copies today. And, of course, you can buy one book at a time if you want. Not so expensive that way. And they make awesome presents. We sold a slew of them for Christmas, and we still have some trilogies left. So get out there and get your copy and get it read. You'll be ready for 2012 in more ways than one. So let's get back to this UFO flying over the mall at DC. I once said that people would believe in UFOs once a craft showed up on the White House lawn for CNN to film. Well, one has shown up on the DC mall for the entire world to see. And what's going on? Not one mainstream news person is talking about this appearance. Why? Is it that UFOs are so well known that they are no longer newsworthy? And what Michelle Obama wore to the inauguration is newsworthy? Come on, Earth Explorers. Where is your heart? Write your congressman. Write your senator. Go to Obama's website and say, what the heck? Come on. Let's get this disclosure on the road. People want to know. Earth Explorers are out here by the millions all over the world, and we know that they've got the information, so why not release it? The most mainstream reporting organization in the world caught a UFO on film in broad daylight, and no one is talking about it. So, now we are ready for Global First Contact. There will be no collapse of the economic market. I guess there is one going on right now. No dissolution of the religious world, like people are flocking to churches right now. And no mass panic in the streets if a group from Sirius B flies across the country, lands their alien craft, and comes forth to officially greet us. Now that is a thought as well. If you traveled all that way, knowing that we are a hostile and selfish race, consuming our planet at a horrendous rate, whose breeding is only checked by the rate at which we murder one another, and who guards our airspace as though it extends all the way to the edge of the heliosphere, what could you possibly design to say when you get here? Just put yourself in their pilot seat. You got a way to travel across space and time. As Mark was talking about, you can muscle all the energy and dive into a one-dimensional dot and dial up Earth as easy as www.earth.com and bam, you're here. You get here, you show up in the atmosphere, you fly a little ways, turning heads and crashing cars as you go, and you land and you open the door and you step out. What in the world are you going to tell an arrogant race like humans? That's a good subject. What would you say to Earth if you came from another world or from another Earth time, or from a secret place on the earth where you have been able to live unfettered until the chandeliers rattled from nuclear concussion? What would you say? Would you just come out and say, all right, don't make me come up there? Or would you say, I have come to show you how to live within the bounds of planet Earth? Or would you say, look, we were here when you got here, and we will be here when you leave. We really don't care what you do with yourselves. Or maybe you've realized, after you travel all this way, and you've done all that solitary thinking while you're approaching our beautiful green marble from the cold expanse of space, that you really don't have anything to say. In fact, we probably wouldn't listen anyway. Heck, one of the greatest, if not the greatest beings in all of the universe came here some 2,000 years ago, and he couldn't make us change either. Well, there is something else to consider here as well. If they have been here for millennia, and most ufologists maintain that they have they witnessed mankind arrive at this level of technology before? If that is the case, then it's a pretty good bet that we didn't fare so well the last times that we got here. We messed it up. We blew the place apart. Or the Earth had some kind of allergic reaction which killed off all but a remnant of mankind in hopes, perhaps, of their starting over again and not becoming the pests we are now. Difficult to say. We might also consider that there is more than one race living on the planet right now, that they are secure in their ability to stay separate from us. Very secure in their ability to stay separate from us, either beneath the sea, or deep in the woods, or high on a mountain, or just behind that next millimeter of space. Just slip in between dimensions, and our eyes just can't pick it up. Many have said that orbs are the signature of those just beyond our eyesight. And it takes a little bit of energy, a little bit of consciousness to bring them out. That and a good flash from a digital camera, and you have excited their molecules enough to make an image on your camera. A lot going on out there. So in the closing of this hour, and we've got about 1.5 minutes, I want to make sure that you understand how important this CNN footage is. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to this program on the archives, either at BBS Radio, of which we are a proud member, or at the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith with the Kevin Smith Show, I want you to get to the website, x2-radio.com, and I want you to look at that video. It will make sense to you because you're going to see Wolf Blitzer there, and you're going to see the mall in the background and the Washington Monument, and then all of a sudden, you're going to see a ship flying right over the mall. Yeah, it's going about 400 miles an hour. So you're going to have to watch quickly because it's going to go quick. And is it a duck? Is it an airplane? It doesn't take long to figure this out, people. You can do it. You can figure it out. Watch the film and then get back with me and tell me what you think. It's important because this is what we've been waiting for. CNN catching a real UFO right on live television in broad daylight. Get there. Read it. Go to X Squared Radio and get squared. We'll be back after these messages. And science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. We're so glad that you're here with us. We're coming to you live from southern Idaho, and it's cold outside, about 28 degrees, and still snowing. It's going to snow for the next couple of days here. Yeah, and this is January 25th, and I'm Brooks Agnew, and next week on X Squared Radio, we have Walter Cruttenden, and he is the author of Binary Evolution, and highly interesting subject, and a great speaker. If you caught him on Coast to Coast recently, you were really had a treat. We're going to go a little bit past his imagination next week, and going to have a great time on the program, so don't miss it. And on February 8th, we have Dr. Gary Schwartz coming on the program. He's the author of The God Experiments. And that is a scientific experiment designed to prove the existence of God, as though we need that. But nevertheless, it's interesting, and he goes about it in a scientific manner. And he's extremely interesting to listen to, so I want you to make sure that you get with us on that day. Our phone lines are open all night, 530-776-5154. You can reach us anywhere on the planet. You can also get to us now through Skype, and you can reach us at BBS Radio, and if you're using PalTalk, you can reach us at bbsradio_com. We are coming to you live through the BBS Radio Network and also through the Steel Eye Media Network, courtesy of our friend Kevin Smith. This hour, and we have about 40 minutes left in it, I want to talk about the 2012 events that are coming up. Right now we're in 2009. We're beginning 2009, the year of the ox. And you're going to have to keep your heads up, people. You're going to have to stay aware, and that's part of the reason why X Squared Radio is here, to keep you informed every Sunday evening between 5 and 8 Pacific. We go live, but we, of course, have archives, two different places. You can archive at bbsradio.com, or you can listen to the archives at x2-radio.com. Virtually the same recording. There are just different benefits going to different places. And we, of course, mount you up into our newsletter, because if you go to the website and sign up for the newsletter, we're going to send you all kinds of special offers throughout the year. Great articles. I have a lot of mothers that write back and say, thanks so much, Dr. Agnew, for your newsletters, because my son or my daughter needed a science project or needed a research paper to do for high school or for college, and thank you so much for the information. We're going to keep up with those this year, too. We've made some resolutions. We've changed some things on the website. If you go to the website, you'll realize that all of the affiliates we used to have, 123 Inkjets and Discovery Channel and all of those, we've had to drop all those because of our affiliate commission junction. They actually went the entire year without paying any commissions, which is not good. We ran their commercials all year long and did many, many tens of thousands of dollars in sales for them throughout the year, and then they didn't pay. So unfortunately, at the end of the day, we have to pay the bills, we have to keep the lights on, we have to pay for airtime, and that means that there is space on the left-hand side of our front page that gets viewed several million times a month. We have had absolutely record downloads the last 30 to 45 days. We've had darn near a terabyte go out, almost 900 gigabytes in the last 30 days. That's a lot of downloads, people. There are hundreds of thousands of people every day listening to archives from X Squared Radio. 4 years of content with the best experts on the planet, and we try to have the best sound quality as well. We don't beat you up with a lot of commercials. You get a tremendous amount of content, and the interviewees, those many hundreds of experts that we've spoken to over the last 4 years, comment on how great the interviews are here at X Squared Radio. That's why we are the number one referring website to BBS Radio. Hundreds of hosts out there from all over the country and countries. And BBS Radio refers more listeners than any other program. And that's because of you. It's because of the scientific curiosity that you have about those things out there and the amount of research that we do for a three-hour program is about 40 hours. We do about 40 hours of research for each and every three-hour program that comes on here. We're on once a week, not every single day, and we don't have a staff of researchers handing a canned interview to the broadcaster. I am not a broadcaster. I'm a scientist. I didn't come from broadcasting. So what you get here is real science, and you get real investigation, and you get real information. And so I want you to make sure that you tell your friends this year, because X Squared Radio is about to branch out with BBS Radio going out on the airwaves. We have absolutely dominated the webcast radio world. BBS Radio is, if you can believe this, in the top 20,000 websites on the web. Now, I don't know if you understand the importance of that. You have Google and Yahoo right up there as number one and number two. But there are billions of websites out there. BBS Radio is in the top 20,000. That means 10 to 12 million people listening every single week. That's a lot of hits, people. That's a lot of visitors. And there's a big difference between the listener to the AM radio late night talk program in their car going down the freeway at 80 miles an hour and a BBS radio listener. The difference is the BBS radio listener is sitting in front of a PC and they have a credit card in their hands. So if you have a message to get to that listener, to the one that owns a computer, to the one that has a credit card or a debit card in their hands, and you have a sale to make, that's the buyer. That is the buyer. You're competing directly with eBay, only on an audio basis. So what you need to do is you need to go to x2-radio.com. You need to click on the advertise link on the left-hand side. And get squared. Reach those millions of people with your product. We sell a lot of product on X Squared Radio. We sold over $40,000 worth of merchandise in a single week from this program. All we ask is a little pay for click, a little tiny pay for the impression, and we get to keep the lights on and you get to sell your product. It's a great relationship. It's what makes radio so awesome as a media for selling your product and reaching your customers. Enough said. 2012 is the end of the Mayan calendar. It has more importance than that, but let's talk about that just for a moment. You remember a popular song called Aquarius. You remember by the group Hair. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. We're ending the age of Pisces. The age in which the Christ was born. The age in which Buddha and Confucius and the birth of Tibetan Buddhism and Plato. This is the age that they talked about. This is the Centelia Aeon. This is the end of the age that Jesus spoke about in the book of Matthew, if you want to access religious information. This is the end of the age mentioned in the Zohar, in the Sefer Yetzirah, in the Popol Vuh. This is the end of the precession. It starts over again right now. And this is the year 2012, at which Earth lines up with the supermassive spinning black hole in the center of the galaxy. And when I mean it lines up with it, when you go out in the night sky, if you don't live in the city, you should be able to see this pretty clearly. If you do live in the city, find yourself a local astronomy club, a local telescope club, and get out for a dark sky event and look up in the sky. When you do, you're going to see the Milky Way galaxy splayed across the night sky. It may go from north to south or east to west, depending on the rotation of the Earth and where you are, but in the middle of that Milky Way, you're going to notice a big dark area, like a slit, like an opening. It has many names. It's called the rift in the Milky Way. The Mayans called it the galactic vagina. It is a dark area where light is literally sucked down a supermassive black hole and it doesn't reach Earth. That is what we are aligning with. We're moving into its planar galactic field as we speak. Many physicists have tried to imagine mathematically and intuitively what a black hole looks like. When they're small, like four times the size of our sun, up to tens of thousands of suns, they're perfectly round. They have no hair, so to speak. They have no mountains, no points on that outer part of the event horizon. The event horizon is the point of no return for even massless particles like photons. Any energy generated on the inside of a black hole reaches that point and has to turn back. Outside of that point, they still better have a lot of energy or they're not getting away. They're going to be pulled to that point of no return, called the event horizon, and into what many physicists and mathematicians call the singularity. This is like a grain of sand in the center of this thing, into which all of this matter has compressed. And in that compression, in that local existence, they warp and bend and stretch space-time. Like a giant bowling ball settled into a bedsheet, they bend the fabric of space-time, and all matter within its reach goes down the drain into the black hole. But as they get larger and they consume more and more matter, hundreds of thousands of suns, tens of millions of suns, they get kind of large and gangly. The singularity is no longer a grain of sand in the very middle. It becomes a Heisenberg uncertainty. We can't locate its location at the same time. It becomes uncertain, its location. In fact, the matter inside the event horizon is so chaotic that it doesn't obey any pattern. It slings up against the inside of its horizon like an ice skater spinning as fast as she can possibly spin, where she can't even hold her arms in anymore. And all of the matter slams up against the inside of the horizon like a giant. And so begins the shape of the black hole. It's no longer like a basketball. No longer spherical black sun rotating out there in the middle of it. No, it begins to flatten out like a giant dinner plate. And all matter is scattered across the sub of that giant hula hoop. In fact, it's such an expansive space, the portion almost has no matter at all, and the outer portions are so dense that they can entire star systems. But the center, all you have is a tremendous warp of space-time. And the only that radiates away from supermassive spinning black hole what are called gravity waves, the ripples and space-time that cause portions on a galaxy, so much so that the energy released actually may be the light engine of galaxies. It holds tens of millions in its orbit, and tens of millions of suns, hundreds of planets. That's what makes up the Milky Way galaxy. That plane of gravity that creates that spiral shape in the middle of space, not a spherical galaxy at all, but a flat, planar galaxy along which all of the stars, main sequence and non-main sequence, are aligned. Earth has been off-center from that plane for many, many thousands of years. And now, at the end of the 26,000-year precession, as the axis of Earth has marched its way through the zodiac, all 12 ages, 2,160 years apiece, to now, when Earth is aligned with that galactic plane of gravity? And what's on the other side of the Earth when it's aligned with this dark rift in the Milky Way but our own sun? And our own sun has been curiously, mysteriously, and uniquely quiet. Hardly a sunspot. Solar cycle 24 is a no-show. Solar cycle 23 was as bad as they come. Solar flares, prominences, and X-class flares on a scale of 9, able to knock out pagers, cell phones, satellites, and disrupt radio communications. But solar cycle 24 is now quiet. We're supposed to peak in 2012. The poles of the sun are supposed to reverse north for south and south for north, as it does predictably at every solar maximum. But the solar maximum is unpredictable right now because the ramping up, the Gaussian shape of activity from the sun hasn't shown up. We've now gone dozen months without a major sunspot from solar cycle 24. And what is going to happen? What is predicted to happen? The Mayans recorded in their writings and made note of on their calendar. When Earth lines up with this rift in the Milky Way with the sun on the other side, the solar flare, the prominences, the coronal mass ejections won't go a mere 100,000 miles out into space. Oh no, they won't just be observable with your corona telescope tuned to the H-alpha wavelength. No. They will be visible in broad daylight because they will lash out from the surface of the sun millions of miles into space. And instead of taking 73 hours for those particles to strike our atmosphere harmlessly, rerouted by our magnetosphere, they're going to come charging to the surface. Some ancient writings call it conflagration. This is the searing of the surface of the Earth with high energy. Some of it in the infrared band. That's the heat that you feel on your skin when you go out to the sun. I don't know if any of you are sun worshippers. Go out and lay on the beach or lay by the pool. Have you noticed it hurts now? You used to be able to play in the sun as a child, running through the sprinklers, and occasionally got a sunburn. That was kind of nasty. Then we came out with sunblock, and you can stay out a little longer. Or if you have really sensitive skin, you can use that SPF 80, also known as blue jeans, and you can protect yourself from the sun. But your exposed skin now, just the arms hanging out the window, or the legs in the lawn chair, have you noticed that the sunlight on your skin causes pain? It's not just warm. There's something else there, piercing the skin, causing discomfort. And as you're looking down at your browning skin, wondering how healthy you're going to look, not pale, also wonder what damage is being done to your skin, because the photons that are striking Earth now are from a different neighborhood than we've ever been in before. Remember, we're traveling across space at 18.5 miles per second, getting ever closer to that galactic plane into which not only resides all of the suns and the planets that revolve around those suns in our galaxy, but unmeasurable, immeasurable amounts of mass called dark matter. And we've talked about that on this program before. Dark because we can't see it. Dark because it doesn't show up in our telescopes. How arrogant can we be? It makes up 95% of the mass of the universe. Maybe it is ultra light matter, and we are the dark matter not quite made it there yet. Nevertheless, the Earth is being hurled predictably toward this band of ever-dense matter. What happens when we get there? Well, there are records that go back many thousands of years that say what's going to happen. And the interesting thing is, whether it's Babylonian text or Persian or Mayan or Toltec or Zapotec or Jewish, the language is the same. It isn't good. There are things that happen to the planet that we are not ready for in our current state. There are some things that you personally, and as a family, and as a community, and a state, and a country, and a planet, need to do to get ready for 2012. This is not Y2K, Earth Explorers. This is not a political or an economic hype. We're not trying to get you to store food and water and relocate yourself and save up money for some silly, mythical computer glitch. This has been talked about by every major civilization since Atlantis. They talk about this date coming up. Sure, you can let it go. You can say, whatever. I'll let the camera light, let's go down. My lottery playing self. The day after 2012, December 21st, and everything will be just fine. Or you can take the advice of a dozen majors, and you can take some decent, prudent precautions. If you don't need them, fine. But if you do need them and you don't have them, I guess I won't see you on the other side. So what I want to talk to you about the next few minutes is how to get prepared. The first thing that you need to do is you need to read some decent material. Go ahead, get the books. It won't kill you. It'll give you the information that you need, not only historical, also religious, also scientific, all rolled into one. Get the 2012 books and read them. The second thing you need to do is follow through with some of the advice that's given there. Store a little bit of food. If nothing else, put yourself together a 72-hour kit. 3 days. Because if something hits, if it's a tsunami, if it's a 300-mile-an-hour wind for a weekend, if it's a fire, if it's a heavy proton storm and it wipes out all the communications, you're going to need about 3 days' food, and I venture to say you don't have it. Canned goods, dry goods, not the stuff you have in the freezer. That doesn't count. When the electricity goes out, that stuff will spoil in 24 hours. All that frozen orange juice and elk meat you have in the freezer, you can't count on it unless it's dried into jerky and you can carry it with you on your back. That's the second thing. If you do put together a little food storage, beans, rice, wheat, canned goods, and by the way, people, store the stuff you eat. Don't go out to one of these fancy places and buy a lot of dehydrated lentils because you're not going to eat them. You're going to starve. You got time. Get the stuff that tastes good. Store the stuff you like. If you like Lay's, then buy a month's supply of Lay's. Trust me, it'll keep. Twinkies? Come on, they last at least 10 years in those wrappers. MREs, excellent. Some decent, wholesome food that will sustain life. And here's the second piece of advice with that. Don't buy it in 55-gallon drums. Don't buy it in 1,000-pound pallets. Because when this hits, the integrated circuits that make up the computers in your vehicle are not going to work. If you have it, pick up an old diesel, something that will run on biodiesel or vegetable oil that you can drive. Or, if you can get your hands on it, an old gasoline engine. The old ones that have points in them with a condenser, not the ones with electronic ignition. That stuff might be fried. You don't have to drive far, but you might have to drive. And you might want to be able to carry something. The only other way out, people, the only other way to get to high ground, to get to your family, to consolidate your group, as it were, is going to be on foot. So make sure that your food storage you can put into a backpack and carry. Yeah, it might weigh 80 pounds, but it'll save your life. And if you have a place up in the hills or out on the farm or away from the coast where you can store that stuff in bulk, then store it there. Don't store it in your two-bedroom apartment in Newport Beach, because it's going to be there when you leave. Store it up in the mountains somewhere or at a friend's house in Arizona or Kentucky and walk. You can make it. Others have done it before you. So those are the advice on storing food. Do I recommend building a bunker and jumping underground, someone asks. Well, let me think about that for a moment. It has been done, and it's quite possible that's the way the race has survived in the past, that they've made their way to the high ground up in the mountains and hid in a cave while the floods or the cosmic radiation or the asteroid storms or the black axiom went by. It's quite possible the race has survived that way. But I use the word survive loosely. Because when the technology's gone, or should I say it another way, when those that know how to make the technology are gone, you are now a primitive race again. You are now hunters and gatherers, living off rodents and whatever seeds you can grow. Those of you that have never grown a garden might starve the first year. You might be eating berries and earthworms for the first year. Think you can do it? That's why I use the word survive loosely. If you know it's coming, and you have the means, and I dare say there's not a single person out there that's listening to this program tonight, or as an archive, that does not have the means, then put yourself together a small storage plan. Get a backpack. Put some stuff in it. A couple of pairs of shoes. You know, they won't be making them anymore. Those imports that you get from Taiwan at Shoe Show or these quick shoe places, they're not going to be there. So get yourself an extra two or three pairs of shoes and wear them a little bit. You're going to need them. Barefoot doesn't work in the middle of the winter. Just a little bit of preparation, people. It's January 2009. We're talking about December 2012. Do the math. It's not very far away. A little bit of preparation now and then, and you're going to be ready. The other thing is you need to store a little bit of water, because with great storms comes great pollution, and when the water pump shut off and you open that little silver valve and nothing comes out, the only thing you're going to have left is what's behind the toilet. And for those of you that have economy toilets, it's probably less than 2 gallons, not enough to last. So every time you empty one of those 2-liter bottles of soda, fill it with water, put a drop of chlorine in it, and store it. Not on concrete. Just store it. These are small containers. You can stuff 4 of them in a backpack, and you got enough water for a couple of days. It doesn't cost you a thing, and besides, it keeps all that plastic out of the trash. So let's do that. I'm reading an email here really quick. For those of you not on Facebook or aware of what's happening with William and Mary's Stargate trip, early this morning, John posted a short comment on his wall indicating that chaos was occurring in Luxor. Those of you that have been to Egypt know that Luxor is a major city in Egypt. A few hours later, he indicated that a fellow traveler had died. Please see the forwarded email below for the only details I have received so far. Any of you receive further information, please forward this to this group, as I know we're all there with them in spirit and love. Now, I don't know if you know this, but my good friend John Riley and William Henry and a group on the Stargate tours went to Egypt. Am I supposed to read this right here? Yes, I just found out. Please forward this to all the group from last trip to Egypt. Thanks, Eden. I am requesting your help today in creating a matrix of love and rainbow light to go out to William Henry's group of about 30 in Luxor, Egypt. A 31-year-old woman from their group was killed, and a war is possible. Chaos has unleashed. The group is confused, fearful, exhausted, and can use all our energies for their safe return. They are there on a mission, and they all feel complete and return with their new knowledge, gifts, clarity, hopes, and truth. We are meditating daily at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time, and Lisa Coltman is organizing a very large group with specific times. So there you have it. If you haven't heard it on the news yet, this is real time, right now, January 25th in Luxor, Egypt. A close friend there in Egypt, in Luxor, violence has broken out and war may be beginning this minute. So those of you that are listening live, if you have friends or family in Luxor, Egypt, or in Cairo, or in Aswan, or in Abu Ghraib, or any of those areas around there, be sure, tell them to get indoors and stay there and try to make arrangements to get out of that country as quick as possible. 2 weeks ago, we brought you a program back from the year 2015. The events that we're talking about right now are occurring just as they were brought back to you from the year 2015. Now, I know that sounds silly. I know you may not believe it. Take a chance, will you? And just listen to what I'm saying. Every single thing that was on that program was true and factual. The documents that we talked about that were signed by our government officials and banks and insurance companies were signed. The collapse that we're talking about in that program are real, and you need to go back and listen to it. 2 weeks ago on X Squared Radio. We have about 15 minutes left in the program. Any of you that want to call in and talk about what we have discussed this hour, you can reach us, 530-776-5154, or you can reach us with paltalk@bbsradio.com, or you can reach us at BBS Radio on Skype. Please contact us. Let us know if you have any more information about those events in Egypt. And make your plans carefully, people. This is 2009, and there are things that we need to be doing right now in preparation. Not just as individuals and as families and as communities, but also as a state, as a nation. There are three things I want you to concentrate on with your votes and with your phone calls and letters to your congressmen and your senators. And by all means, contact your local state government, specifically your state governors. They do listen. Every single letter that you write, they will listen. Don't fill out some form response. They want to see five or six sentences from you, from your heart. So here's what I want you to concentrate on. Number one, I want you to concentrate on this with, and if you can write a letter a week, it's a big help. Number one, alternative energy. I want you to write your congressman, your senator, and your governor. You can do it online. It's the easiest thing in the world. And I want you to use your words. But I want you to say, it is time for us to start supporting those inventors and small companies out there that are bringing alternative energy to the consumer level, biodiesel, cellulosic ethanol, biomass, and those things that have the appearance of 0 point. Now, they're not really 0 point, but hydrogen, compressed natural gas, wind power, solar power, all of these things need funding, and it's not going to come from the government unless you write your letter. And another thing, if you've got a nest egg built up and you think you might retire on it, guess again. I think you should get it out and you should spend it. Find a cause in new energy and get your money to them. It will might save the planet, people. We in the United States of America depend on foreign oil. About 60 to 70% of the crude oil that comes into this country is imported. That's about to change. And the term essential vehicles only is going to have a meaning for you. If you're used to driving every day to work and taking a leisurely drive on the weekend and you happen to use an interstate, that's going to change. That's number one. Get involved in alternative energy, not petroleum. Something like biodiesel. Cellulosic ethanol is different than regular ethanol. All ethanol is not created equal, okay? Ethanol created from corn may not be good. It's the same ethanol. It's just the growing of the corn over and over and over again is ruining the land. And we're driving the price of corn up, which is starving the world. Cellulosic ethanol is made from junk. Corn cobs, stalks, wheat straw, switchgrass, trash. That's what cellulosic ethanol is made from. Now, it's not the only product that comes out. This is really neat. It's really neat because ethanol is only one of the products that comes out of this process. The other product that comes out is a raw material used in all kinds of chemistry. I'm not going to tell you what it is because the company that I'm working with happens to know what it is and they're making good with it. If you want to know more, you can access the website, x2-radio.com, and click on the Green Star USA link if you want to find out more about that. Okay, that's number one. Get involved in alternative energy. Number two, I need you to pay attention here. Do I have your attention? Number two, you have to make personal preparations for an extended period without communication, without travel, without food, without water. Put yourself together a little storage plan. You don't have to go to one of these online places. We used to carry a couple of affiliates. They stopped paying their commissions. We don't feature them anymore. We've researched dozens, perhaps 100 companies that sell food storage products. And it's not worth it. You can go to Walmart and get exactly the same thing. You can buy MREs the same as anybody else. Use some sense and put together a little food storage plan and buy the stuff you eat, okay? That's number two. Number three, on a personal preparation level, there are other things that we need to be concentrating on besides wealth and besides things. In this 2012, you've heard it all. You've heard the David Icke's. You've heard the Danny and Brinkley's. Come on! Are you tired of the fear? Are you tired of the negativity and the conspiracy theories? Are you tired of the Zeta Reticula garbage? Come on, people. You're tired of that. That's because there's a positive way out. Your consciousness adds to the sum of the sentient beings in the universe. So the most important preparation that you can make for 2012 is to raise your consciousness. Now, those of you that are listening on the BBS radio network, you already are going in the right direction. There are over 100 hosts on the BBS radio network. Most of them will steer you in the right direction and give you the right information to raise your consciousness, your level of love, your absence of fear, your awareness of what is going on in the universe, and your integral part in it. You are important as an individual. In fact, if this universe were to lose one of you, and that doesn't mean die, because you physically give up your body, but you don't leave the universe. But if one of you were to leave this universe, the entire thing would collapse and have to be rebuilt with a new mathematical equation of which you are a part. You are Source. You got it? You are Source. The only judge out there in the universe is you. You are making yourself the way you are. You are master of your own life condition. If you want to change it, you've got to follow the law of attraction. That's how it's done. If you want to know how that's done, the best resource out there that's got all the information that you need is the Ark of Millions of Years. Sorry for the sales pitch, but doggone it, we spent a lot of years on the book, and we did it for a reason, because we wanted you to have the best information possible on what to do with 2012 coming up. And that's the resource for you. It's called Unlocking the Secret. You can get it from Amazon if you don't want to buy it from us. If not, you can go to Ark of Millions of Years and pick it up. Those are the three things. Send your energy and your money to the alternative industry, energy industry, and get it off the ground. We need it. It's almost too late. The second is put yourself together a little storage plan. And the third is raise your consciousness. You've got to increase the vibration at which you exist, which means that the events that just happened in Luxor, Egypt, are a result of this kind of fear. Now, I have to tell you, I know personally most of the 30 people that went with William Henry to Egypt. They are all enlightened souls, and they all felt as though they were on a mission to learn, to teach, and to affect the universe in a place of absolutely mighty sacred geometry and history, and that is the area of Egypt. I know William Henry, and I know Mary Lamondo, and they put together an awesome tour full of activity and knowledge, and they don't try to preach to you, but they do give you a lot of knowledge that you can use throughout your life. These 30 people went to Egypt with that kind of hope, that kind of energy, and that kind of love. And now one of them is dead because this kind of fear exists in the world. But even in that event, even in that sense of loss and confusion, there is going to be good and light and love because of the sacrifice these individuals made, not out of fear, not out of wanting to, you know, make another person feel guilty, but out of love. And that is what affects the universe. I want all of you to face your day tomorrow morning, January 26th, when you go to work. I want you to leave the rumors, leave the fear, leave the grudges behind. We are now in a new world. We are now in a new day, and as my friend Jay-Z Knight says, in a new neighborhood. Take advantage of it. Live as though there is no tomorrow. No, I don't mean go spend all your money and do those irrational things you always wanted to do. Yes, I do. I mean spend all your money and do those irrational things you always wanted to do, because that's what you're here for. That's what the earth is here for. That's what the purpose of life is. Not to not live up to the point where you say, okay, I'm going to retire and I'm going to live. Hey, what happened to my physical body? It's all wore out. I can't ride motorcycles or scuba dive or skydive anymore. I'm old and I'm sick and I hurt. Come on, get out there and do it now. You're already retired. Live like there's no tomorrow. And keep listening to X Squared Radio and tell your friends about it too, because 2009 is going to be a phenomenal year. In February, we have four of the best guests on planet Earth. They wrote books, they made movies, and listening to each and every one of them is going to change you, and you're going to grow. And that, after all, is what we're here for. This is X Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew, and I want you to tune in and get squared. And we'll be back with you next week, 5 o'clock Pacific Time, with more X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers. Well, that's it for tonight. I don't know if you're still listening out there, but that was some pretty earth-shaking news. From Luxor, Egypt, I have friends there. I can't communicate with any of them right now, but I'm going to try to spend the rest of the evening communicating with them and see if I can find out what happened. If my producer's out there, I have officially signed off.